Hi, this is Chaz Palminteri, and if you're thinking about getting your eyes done, the only person to see is Dr. Rothman of LASIK of Nevada. I flew all the way from New York to be here, and Dr. Rothman did my eyes. And all I could say is, it's a miracle. I could see. You see Dr. Rothman of LASIK of Nevada.
Living in Las Vegas starts now. Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, welcome from Las Vegas, Nevada, that groovy little podcast that gives you a true first-person look into what it's like to call Sin City your home, the Living in Las Vegas podcast. And now your host, a man who clearly needs some kind of introduction, otherwise you wouldn't know who he was. Mr. Scott Whitney.
I missed you. How about that? By the way, amazing Jonathan. I'll do this again. Camera two real quick. Last time I did this, I got a bloody nose. Watch. Does it look like it went in and came out? It's pretty good. Anyway, camera one. Welcome, everybody, to the Living in Las Vegas podcast on the thunderously popular Vegas Video Network. Big applause. Yeah. Huge. I am your humble host, Scott Whitney. It's great to have you here. I'm missing my naughty jelly sweet, Melissa. She's out making a living. As a matter of fact, this has happened to her a couple times now. She's been recognized while roaming the airports of Minnesota and all, but she's in San Francisco right now, and then she's going to Reno, and then she's heading off to, I think it's Indianapolis. So if you see her there, shake her hand, buy her a beer, and tell her that you missed her on this episode of the Living in Las Vegas podcast. We're pretty excited about what's going on. It's been a while since we've been here. By the way, shout out to my brother over there. Where is he? Jacob Cannon. I want a big hand for Jacob. Without that. By the way, guess what we learned today? Jacob is assless. Who would have known? It's not in my notes, but he is. Want to thank LASIK of Nevada for longtime sponsor. They've been a sponsor now since January of 2000. What is this? 12? 11. So over a year. Thanks to those guys. Especially thanks to Dr. Rothman. Dr. Rothman is the most experienced LASIK surgeon living in Las Vegas. Actually living in Nevada. Over 40,000 procedures. So that's pretty cool. Got a pretty interesting show today. Something a little different than what we normally do. I've got a couple guests that I think are going to really give you some pretty cool insight into what's happening in here in Las Vegas. The first of which is a gentleman named Bob O'Neill. Bob is in charge of what's happening at a place called the Royal House. It used to be called the Royal Resort. Fascinating story, what's happening with this property. And I've always kind of wanted to know how stuff works with this kind of work. So we're going to have Bob on a little bit later to talk a little bit about that. We've also got a longtime viewer and listener of the show, Ray Flavin. Flavin? It's Flavin. Yeah, I thought so. Sorry. You got to stop drinking while you're doing this work. And he's going to talk a little bit about what we did this weekend, which is a lot of fun as well. Want to thank our huge live studio audience.
Yeah.
Okay. And our live chat, great to see you guys here as well. And I want to explain kind of where I've been. This is we've been off for it's been about 3 weeks now. One of those weeks was kind of a break for me, a birthday break. I don't look 51, but I am. We've dealt with some medical issues, unfortunately. The good news was my mom. And she's okay now. But it's been interesting. You know, for those of you who've watched this show for a while, you know that back in 06, I experienced kind of a medical thing. I had some heart palpitations that kind of freaked me out. Ended up in the emergency room at Mountain View Hospital. Was there in ICU for several days. Had the angiogram the whole 9 years. It scared the crap out of me is what it did. But it ended up being okay. Well, we ended up back at Mountain View again for my mom. And the story is, it's interesting because she had jaundice. Now, jaundice for kids, for babies, happens all the time. It means nothing. It's pretty regular. You put the kid under the sun, they get better. When an adult gets jaundice, it's really bad news. It's basically a failure of your digestive issues. So I've got a photo up here that I kind of want to show you what's going on here. That pretty picture is of the pancreas. That's that kind of a cream-colored thing. That green thing is the gallbladder. And I wanted to show you that because it is in this area that, you know, all the digestive work happens. And what happened for my mom is, if we go back to that photo real quick, you see where it says the common bile duct, that little line there? That little line right there is as wide as a pencil lead. And what happens is the pancreas and the liver and all these guys secrete these enzymes to break down your food. One of the things it creates is this chemical called bilirubin. And for those of you who are into poop, bilirubin is what makes your poop brown. Did you know that? You didn't, but now you do. Well, if your common bile duct gets clogged or restricted or a stricture, well, that bilirubin has nowhere to go. So it starts to build up and build up. It goes into your blood and then goes into your skin, and that's what turns people yellow. Now, what also can cause that is some very nasty, scary things like kidney cancer and liver cancer and pancreatic cancer and all those things. And so when we first saw my mom turning yellow, we thought, oh, this is not going to be good news. We were very, very concerned. We brought her to Mountain View Hospital, which is really a pretty cool hospital. They're doing something, by the way, that's amazingly smart, and I bet you it's doubling their ER business. They have a billboard up on 95, southbound 95, just before the 15, that shows their wait time in their emergency room, which is brilliant, brilliant. And it's usually 9 minutes, 15 minutes, those kinds of numbers. Most of us think, I'm going to be waiting 2 hours in the emergency room. What they're doing is some of the smartest marketing I've ever seen for a hospital. Anyway, so we take her in there. She's as yellow as, I don't know, yellow. And they're like, how long have you been this yellow? A couple weeks. Jeez. And she didn't want to go in, by the way. I had to basically coerce her to go in. I basically said, Mom, you're yellow. She goes, yeah, I know. I said, well, we should go in the hospital. No, I'll wait until Monday. This was a Thursday. I'm like, you know, okay, Mom, how about we go in now? She goes, no, I don't want to do that. So the next morning I called her and said, Mom, I couldn't sleep because I was so worried about you. Can we go in on Saturday? And she said, yes. We brought her in. They check her out. She's yellow as hell, and they test her bilirubin. Your bilirubin number should be 1 in your blood. Hers was 25, which is not a feature. So they thought, okay, this is bad news. So they did a procedure where they take a scope and put it down her throat into her stomach and up into this area that you see, this common bile duct area. And they found a stricture. Can you see my mouse? Yeah, right there, right where it connects to the pancreas. There was a compression there. So what do? Well, very much if you have a stricture in your heart, they put a stent in there. So they put a little stent in there. It's like, okay, there you go. She immediately stopped looking as yellow, and she got feeling a little bit better. And so a couple days later, we take her back to her house. Come to find out, she had a little high blood pressure problem. They gave her some drugs for that. 2 days later, she calls me, and she's weak, and she's wobbly, and she's kind of turning yellow again. We're like, what the? So we take her back to the hospital again. Come to find out, that little stent that was sitting right here had moved on her. And so the constriction, the stricture, happened again. Her bilirubin count went up. She started turning yellow. Bad news. So they went in the second time. Fixed the stent. They put it back in that same little location, right where it meets the pancreas. Started getting better again. This time we decided to take her to our house because, you know, she needs kind of a walker to walk anyways. When you're in a hospital, you get weak. You know, hospitals are dangerous places, actually. And we heard something really interesting. The second emergency room doc we met said, you take a 27-year-old, you put him in a hospital for 2 days, he loses half of his strength in 2 days. So this is a woman who's 76 who uses a walker anyways. She was pretty weak. We wanted to keep an eye on her, so we brought her to our house. And hospitals being dangerous, during the second procedure, they introduced a bug in her. So she had a blood-borne thing going on, so she had to have an IV. So they did a PICC line, which is like an IV that they keep in your arm. And so we had to do an IV for her at the house. So we were doing that, and it was fine. And then one Monday, a week ago yesterday, she started having these real bad pains right here. Well, this is about where your pancreas is. She's like, uh-oh, I think I've got the problem again. We're like, you know, how can that be? Well, when you become a poop expert, if your poop is clay-like, guess what? You've lost your bilirubins in your poop. And that's what happened. So we went back there. She's, you know, feeling really in a lot of pain. And so they gave her a drug, I think it's called Dilipin or Dilipon or something like that. Anyways, it's 100 times or 10 times stronger than morphine. And they asked her, you know, what's your pain level? And she says, well, I'm a 7 out of 10. So they gave her this drug, and immediately she started feeling a little bit better. And, you know, the anxiety went down a bit. She's still yellow, of course. After a while, she started to feel a little bit more pain. And by the way, her blood pressure was lower than usual. The first time she was in there, she had high blood pressure. Now she's got this low blood pressure, like, you know, 90s. And we're like, this is kind of weird. But her pain came back up again. They gave her another dose of this medicine, moved her to a room, moved her to another room, and she became unresponsive. As in, she wouldn't answer us. So we were pretty freaked out there. I will tell you that I have never been so scared in my life as I was when she wouldn't respond to my name, wouldn't respond to her name. I was pretty freaked out. So you know when you're in a hospital, you hear code blue, room 225. Or code white, or code gray. By the way, code gray means that somebody is being combative. Well, we heard a couple times, rapid response team, room 244. Well, we got to find out what the rapid response team was because they came for my mom. So rapid response is basically she's not responsive and they need to get her to kind of get back into it again. So we're watching this, we're hearing it over this thing. Four or five people come rolling into her room. They tipped her. Now, so she's laying flat. Her blood pressure had dropped to 65 over something 40 or whatever, which is dangerously low. So the first thing they do is they tip her back so her head is below her body to help create higher blood pressure. They pump her full of fluids. The more fluid in you, the higher blood pressure you have, natural, just physics. So they kept doing that. And they gave her a drug to help change the effect of this you know, super morphine drug. And she came out of it, basically. Which was, it all happened in about 5 minutes. You know, went from basically close to nothing to she could kind of respond again. And so she spent time in the ICU. The stent had come out again for a second time during all this. So they put in the stent again. Go back to that graphic. And instead of putting one stent in right here, what they did was they actually put two stents in side by side. So it was like this, two stents side by side so that they wouldn't move around as much. Then we transferred to a different hospital to do another procedure to check other stuff out, and it looked out okay. So now she is her old ornery self, and she's in a care facility, not a hospital, but she has to go through the antibiotics for a while, and she has to go through physical therapy and occupational therapy because she hasn't walked in a while. So she's not a happy camper, but she's her still spunky kind of broad self. So the good news is she seems to be okay, and we're very thankful for that. Some interesting things that you see at the hospital, that's a tough job, man. I don't care what you do. You know, there are some doctors who could use some lessons in bedside manners. You know who you are, Dr. F. But also some nurses that are stunning. And they're doing some things now in hospitals that I think is very bright. And one of them is putting up a board that lets you know what's happening any given day. We've got a shot of this. And this kind of tells you who is your nurse? Who is your doctor? How are you feeling? What's the goal for today? Who should we contact in an emergency? What day is it? When you're in a hospital for several days, you lose track of what day it is. So these kind of things I was really impressed with from a management perspective, a customer or patient awareness perspective. So nice job over at Mountain View Hospital, and thanks for saving my mom's life, because she can be a pain in the ass, but I still kind of like her. Okay. Also, you know, you may notice I've got Band-Aids all over me. So every year I go in for my cancer scan, which is a full body scan where you take off all your clothes. You know, I'm a white English Irish, Scottish guy, so I burn. You look at me, I catch on fire. So every year I go in and do this full body scan thing, and you know, it's just the most embarrassing thing. Because you go in, you take off all your clothes, the guy says, okay, put on this, you know, they don't even give you a gown anymore. They just say, here, put on this piece of paper and wrap it around you like a towel. Okay. Yeah, code red. So I put it on. And of course, it rips. The gal comes in, my dermatologist, who's great, Dr. Langford. She's outstanding. Very high voice. She always refers to your partner as your sweetie. So doesn't matter if you're straight or gay, sweetie works. I thought that was pretty clever. And they always bring in somebody with them. I prefer, personally, to have just the doctor in there. How about I'll lay down, you go ahead and spread my legs, play around with the goods. I get it, you're looking for the melanoma, okay. But the audience thing kind of freaks me out a little bit, to be honest with you, and I don't care for it. Now, I've had two audiences. I've had a male audience, then I've had a female audience. I don't really care for either one of them, but I think I would prefer to have the female audience, which is what I had this time. 2 years ago, I had a guy in there, and I'm like, okay, what is he thinking? Poor guy, poor white guy. You're hung like a chiclet. Well, of course I'm hung like a chiclet. I got this gal over here playing around with the goods, and I've got you watching me playing around with the goods. What do you want from me? So this time I had a girl come in. She walks in there, and I comment about my outfit, and I say, I'm surprised that you're not wearing a similar thing. And they didn't think that was very funny. Big babies. And you know what? The other thing is, when they're doing the LN2 burn, I don't know if you can see that, but that looks pretty gory right now. I had a little cancerous thing going there. So they take LN2, liquid nitrogen, and they spray you with it. And when you call a doctor Dr. Mengele, when they do that, they almost never think that's funny. Almost never. I think it's hysterical. Come on, Dr. Mengele, you're hurting me. And surprisingly enough, they go a little longer with the LN2 because they're not nice people. Anyways. So that's it. Medical history, looking good. Mama's okay. I look like I have, I don't know, something. So remember the time I did a couple years ago, I had that stuff all over my forehead? Remember that? That was from Dr. Langford, the killer. But that's it. Enough about me. We're going to take a 30-second break. And we're going to come back with Bob O'Neill from the Royal House. This is the Vegas Video Network, and you're watching Living in Las Vegas. Back in a sec.
Traditional media believes that after about 3 minutes, you'll tune out. Most Vegas media companies think if it doesn't jiggle, you won't tune in. At the Vegas Video Network, we think both are wrong. The Vegas Video Network is the first and only live online broadcast network that specializes in insider news and expert views about Vegas. We combine great storytelling with the ability to watch when and where you want, on your computer, mobile device, or television. Discover the real Las Vegas. Visit VegasVideoNetwork.com.
Just got a call from my doctor. She wants me to come back so she can burn out my retinas. These doctor people are not to be toyed with. Hey, by the way, if you want to reach out to us, there's a couple ways. You can check out our email address, which is onairq@livinginlv.com. Again, onairq@livinginlv.com. We've got a new way to reach out. Well, first we're going to do the friends. Is camera 4 even lit? I forgot if we checked that. We've got, there's our adopted, look at that good-looking young man. This is Stuart, our son, who's in beautiful Moscow. And he's up there because he sent an email to friends@livinginlv.com. So if you send an email to friends@livinginlv.com and you include a photo, then boop, lip, pop, you're up there. You're rich. Your whites will be whiter. Your brights will be brighter. This is a promise, not a guarantee. Why? Because I don't want to be sued. Hey, we used to talk about a toll-free number, but are we going to do that now? No, because we have something new and groovy. What? Come on, Scott. You've been gone for 3 weeks. You've got new and groovy? Yes, I do. Check out this page. Boink. Look off to the side there. Oh, you can. You see it? Okay, right over there. Send us a voicemail. You don't even have to pick up the phone, you lazy bastards. All you do is you click on this. What? Oh, come on. And you start recording. You click that. Boom, you leave us a voicemail. It comes through the automagics of the world, and you're on the big show. What? Why is that? Because we love you. Because we want you to be part of the show. Of course, we're on the Twitter. Vegas Video NTWRK is our tweet. We've got 3,000 some odd people following us. God bless their little hearts. And of course, if you don't see our show live, you can watch us on VegasVideoNetwork.com, iTunes, Roku, YouTube. And every Friday night from 8 to 12, we're here on KSHP AM 1400. And don't forget the live chat, kids, like I just did. Don't forget the live chat. Which, look at it, there's a whole bunch of people on live chat, and I didn't even notice that. Hey, everybody, Dougie. I see Dougie and Jackie and Marie and Bobby and Billy. It's like Christmas all over again. Okay, so let's talk a little bit about what's kind of happening here in the Las Vegas. There's been, you know, of course, tons of news about, you know, foreclosures, mostly in the residential world, but there's also been a lot of bad news about commercial real estate. We're just inches away from Fountain Blue, which is a hunking multi-billion dollar piece of nothing right now that was bought for, I don't think, $100 and some odd million. Across the way, there's Echelon, also just kind of stopped. And there's been a lot of pretty negative press. But on the other hand, we're starting to see a really pretty groovy resurgence, an attempt to make things better here. You know, one of the good examples, of course, is downtown. So Fremont East. You know, you've got the Fremont Experience, and then just east of it is some pretty cool stuff. There's a downtown bar, there's a Griffin, there's Insert Coin, Don't Tell Mama, the piano bar. There's some pretty cool stuff going on. First Friday has gotten an injection of power. And there's a little place just next door to us that used to be called the Royal Resort. Now, this is a hotel that's been there, so I've been told, for 30, 40 years. It's been there for a very long time. It used to have gambling. It used to be like a sports book as well. But 2 or 3 years ago, if somebody said to you, hey, I'll meet you at the Royal Resort to grab a drink, you probably would have been shot because it wasn't the place to go. But that has completely changed. It has been transformed into what's now called the Royal House. And part of the reason that's happened is a gentleman by the name of Bob O'Neill, who joins me now. Ladies and gentlemen, Bob O'Neill.
Hey. It's amazing.
Is this Bob? Thanks for coming to the show, brother.
Hey, Scotty, I gotta tell you, you know, I was just walking by, and the booze is free, so why not?
So that's how we get them. We wait.
It's actually that easy.
It really. We just.
But actually, I want to go back to the story of your mom. That was an amazing story.
Oh well, thanks.
I mean, I'm sitting here off stage, and you start to do this whole thing about code gray, code blue. But my mom was with me for like 12 years before she passed away, and I got to tell you. You know, I had about 2 or 3 of those.
Yeah.
So when I was sitting off stage, you started telling those stories, man. You know, my mom was Irish Catholic, probably drank. She drank martinis till I think the last 3 days of her life.
As they should.
And she would never say she ever wanted a martini. She would always just say, my son would like one.
Right.
So I figured we probably come from the similar
That's
similar
funny
ilk.
Because my mom, you know, she's a drinker smoker.
Right, no, exactly.
You know, the whole, you know, she would say, actually the first time I brought her in there, she said, they're going to ask me, how much do you drink and do you smoke?
That'd be yes and yes.
And they go, yeah, how much do you drink? I don't know, 3 glasses a night. I'll have a glass of wine or a couple glasses of wine or maybe a couple scotch and water or whatever. And they're like, do you have a drinking problem? No, I know where the drinks are. They're right up there in the cabinet. I got to, you know.
No, I'm civilized.
Right, exactly.
Get off my ass.
Exactly. And do you smoke? Yeah, I smoke about a pack a day. So it was interesting watching that whole thing transpire. But it was scary. But it was interesting. Why, I tell you, the nurses are great.
Close proximity is key to it. The fact that the way you talked about your mom is very similar too, because, you know, let's face it, you know, Peter Mastroianni's place on the West Side, you know, the common world was K's down, you know, because she did a face plant, and off they come and they pick her up, and it's almost like, you know, the guys who do emergency, whether they be firemen or they be the meat wagon boys, they show up. And you know you got great insurance when they go, good to see you, Kay. You know, and off you go.
And that's part of the deal. Yeah. The second time we were at the emergency room, we asked the doctor, so do you like this? And he's like, I love it. And we asked, my mom and I both asked, well, why do you like it? He goes, because it's a mystery. I mean, these people are close to death. Oh, and yeah. I'm like, hold on, yeah. Dr. Kildare, we're in this room.
Right.
And she's yellow like a freaking banana. I don't want to hear you digging close to death people.
Oh, God.
And then anyways.
When you said code gray, I remember one time I was sitting outside and she went in for some routine thing. And, you know, that was like a 7-year period. So some of these times, every time she's going down, she was good for another 6 years.
Yeah.
But she went down this one time and got that code red, code blue, do this, room 44 or something like that. And all of a sudden I went, oh, my God, because there was like 27 guys hauling her ass out. And I didn't know what she was doing.
Yep.
And then all of a sudden she's sitting there. And she's kind of half in, half out, and you know, and you almost, you know, genuflect, kind of bless yourself, and then you walk in thinking, okay, this is it. And I'm up there, and she starts working it. Am I okay?
What do you need, brother? Oh yeah,
got it. Oh yeah, work that. Well, you have to do advertising. I'll pay for the drink.
So speaking of Royal House.
Go ahead.
It's nice that we kind of bonded on the mom thing.
No, I like that too.
Cool.
But at the end of the day, she went code gray on the dock, and that's how I know she was fine.
Did she get angry?
Oh, yeah.
Get your hands off me.
Let's talk about business here.
So,
but here's to moms, by the way.
Oh, yeah, to moms.
Absolutely.
There you go.
Good.
Pink. Mom.
Mom.
Miss Nancy, the broad.
Kay.
So the reason why we have you here, Bob, is I think what you're doing over at, you and your team, are doing over at
actually, I'm your landlord. I was trying to collect rent.
Well, I know that.
I'm kidding.
And thanks for coming by. but first of all, I want people to kind of understand kind of your background. You've
sure.
told me this, but you've been exposed to some of the big names of you know real estate here.
Sure.
So kind of give some people some background before we go into what you guys have been doing over at the hotel.
You know, Las Vegas is one of those places where no matter what you do. You're always exposed to power, simply because it's a very small market, but internationally it's known by everyone. So I got here in 1974. I was hitchhiking into town on my way back to my third year at University of New Mexico, and I stopped. There was snowing in Flagstaff. That's when you're hitchhiking a lot. You always check the weather ahead.
Right.
And that was October of 74. And by January of 74, it was kind of like traditional for to go get a job. Hey, if you're going to hang out for 3 months, go get some money.
Right.
Figure out what you're going to do. So I started a small business, and I never left. And what was interesting about the town is people show up for you. There's something about Las Vegas that's very organic, and it's always worked for me that I'm looking for a gig, and somebody shows up and says, hey, I need this. I said, I can do that. And as a result of that, I started my first sound company, and I did a... what was commonly referred to as sound installation.
Okay.
Next thing you know, I'm putting in stereos. Next thing you know, I got JCPenney. Next thing you know, I got Sears. I got Lafayette Radio. I got the Upper Ear. And if anybody's been in Las Vegas a long time, you'd actually know what I was talking about. But what really happened was I got to meet Las Vegas. Mm. And I met senators. I met mayors. I met people that had big names that I had no idea who they were.
Right.
All they knew is that I was the best guy at an Austin Martin in the city. And simply because, did I ever fix an Austin Martin? Did I ever put a stereo in Austin? No. The guy brought me an Austin Martin, and if I had to do 27 hours to get that Austin Martin to have the perfect 8-track tape,
right.
I got it done.
Right.
As a result of that, the town grew around me, and I got to meet great people. And those people really defined a career. So I never actually applied for a job in the last 74 to now, whatever, who's ever doing math, it's probably 35, 36 years now. And those folks show up, and then I find myself working for them. Because the town was small, and frankly, even at 2 million people, it's still a very small city. Mm. So I've been very, very blessed that I have two kids here. They're all Nevadans. I'm a grandfather now, so I have a grandson who is a Nevadan as well. And I think when you say major names, I work for people who live and worked in Nevada, and they just happen to be some great people.
And you're exposed to some of the most iconic properties here in Las Vegas.
Yeah, I think starting, I don't know how long you've been here, but...
We moved here in 05.
Oh, 05.
Yeah. So I'm a long
time. So I'm ancient.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm dirt. Right, yes.
You look pretty good for dirt.
Thank you. But... For dirt, that's good. Code gray.
Please, not another one. I've had enough code grays
for
all there is.
I think the first guys that I met here, and if you're historically connected to this town, There was a place on Spencer and Flamingo called the Greystone, and that was back in 84, 85. Previous to that, I started to redevelop real estate. And give me a cutoff if I start talking too long. Or just go code something.
Code black.
Like code shut up.
Code shut up. Code SDF.
So I ended up doing this thing called Greystone. And Greystone was an office building. And up to that point in time, IBM was like the guy. Like if you get IBM to be a tenant in your building, you're like a bad, bad, bad developer. So I ended up getting IBM. And I'll never tell that story live, and frankly, I'll never even tell it privately. But the fact that we got them, it was my first exposure to the fact that I was competitive. I got that guy. And the people who I got it for paid me minimal money. But the guy I beat out of it hired me. And that's how I ended up in the Greystone project. And again, it, when you look in retrospect after 40 years of being in the business, it's not that, it's every opportunity, whether it's a positive or negative, people show up in your life, and then some things happen. This right. guy was Rudy Perez. He didn't want to know why. He didn't know how I beat him. He has no idea why they went to a substandard building when they should have went to his. All he wanted to know is how much I made, and he wanted to triple it because nice. let's go and let's make this thing happen.
Nice.
Those guys taught me about Los Angeles development because they were Los Angeles developers. They taught me what's commonly referred to as exposure. So they introduced me to phenomenal architects. I understood the office building. I understood branding and marketing. So I started to, rather than a very, very distressed structure back in 1983, I started to realize that if I could get Eastman Kodak, and Eastman Kodak was a critical play, even if it was 800 square feet, I'd slap Eastman Kodak on the building because in those days, Eastman Kodak was a huge right. tenant in this town.
Right.
And then if you were to slap a local boy next to Eastman Kodak, he'd feel like, oh, boy, I have a
right.
ride.
Right.
And in those days, we opened up TGI Fridays. Back in 1983, TGI Fridays was like such a happening bar.
Right.
You know, that tells you how actually in the desert we were.
Yeah.
You could get, you know, 50-cent drinks, and you can get a buck and a quarter shot and beer down at Binion's in those days. But the bar at TGI Fridays made our office building.
Is that right?
And that's the first time I understood about use. Use, mixed use, and how to put good brands together with an excellent, excellent development company called Rakovich, Bowers & Perez out of Los Angeles. And as a result of that, I would fly to Los Angeles, and we were redoing the Will Turner Theater. We were doing the Fine Arts Center. And I was exposed. I was exposed to talent. Yeah. And I think because I never went back to school, this became my graduate program.
Sure.
I didn't realize I was going to get caught into it. Obviously, I'm Irish. I have a gift of gab. But, you know, you went out, and you're trying to figure out how to make a living.
Right.
So real estate became my living, and development of real estate became my love. I just absolutely adored it.
Right.
Because I got to hang around with great talent.
And you're exposed to some iconic properties here on the Strip. I mean, I know that you don't want to brag
about it. Yeah, that's where the story goes. My tenants became Eastman Kodak.
Right.
Hilton.
Yeah.
You know, there was different groups who owned hotels. Anthony Marnell, who's Marnell Correo, had an accounting firm who ran my accounting department. They were tenants of ours.
Right.
An advertising company who advertised for most of the hotels. And as a result of it, this network of tenants, that technically they were my tenants, but we started doing stuff like the Greystone Yacht Race, you know, because what the hell? Cocktails, drinks. We're still leasing space, and I was trying to figure out how to get, you know, another 70,000 square feet built.
Right.
Well, what I didn't realize was exposure. I was exposing myself to all of this talent that was coming here organically, very much like yourself, who is starting businesses, coming in from other places around the planet, and landing in this godforsaken place called Las Vegas,
right.
and probably had to come up with different excuses of why they're going to Las Vegas, but never, ever. Ever, ever was disappointed with the fact that they came here and their lives changed.
Right.
And all of a sudden, I was getting offers. I got offers to do this, I got offers to do that, and I've got an offer to work for Marnell Correo. And Marnell Correo at that time was a construction company. And that's how I got exposure to Steve Wynn's
right.
and to those type of players.
Right.
Not because I was building those places. I was asked to do real estate
you're making deals for them, finding
not
properties.
Really making deals. I was more brought in to do I was brought in to really bring the development marketplace to a construction design firm.
Okay.
And then as a result of that, not specifically to get into the gaming business, really to build office spaces and do kind of what I was doing already.
Right. Okay. So I got to figure that being exposed to the Wynns and the folks who are building
these,
you just have to just absorb this huge amount of what the hell?
Well, and on top of it, be giving the opportunity to have time and capital
right.
to study and then be around 50 or 60 great engineers, architects, designers, and entrepreneurs who now in retrospect you look at them because now it's 35 years later and
right.
you know one of the best hotel developers on the planet, Steve.
Right.
In those days, everybody was downtown.
Yeah.
You know, so you're building things like the Mirage,
right.
that wasn't even a conversation. You know, that was just a site that
Were you telling me once that was planned for downtown?
Well, that conversation's mostly bar talk. But yes, I mean, essentially at that time, we had made an offer on property that was in the Union Pacific Railroad. that if the Union Pacific Railroad had accepted that offer, now remember, in those days, the Union Pacific Railroad, which is where the Smith Center is about to open,
right?
I mean, it was just dirty. I mean, it was full of oil. It was a mess. So they called it a Superfund site. So there was plenty of reasons why it didn't happen.
Yeah.
But if they had in kind of like if your dog was named Toto kind of dream, and if they had accepted it and we had bought it, yeah, things like the Mirage might have ended up downtown, and so might have the Rio, and
right,
those type of things.
Right. So talk to me how you got involved with the Royal. What was the Royal Resort? So here's this hotel.
Sure.
Which doesn't have a great reputation. It's just
right,
kind of sitting there, kind of dying on the vine,
right,
it seemed like. And you've come in to kind of consult and help
right,
ride this along. How did you pick that hotel in the first place to decide we're gonna pretty this dude up?
Well, it was 2007, 2008, so, you know, the world was falling apart.
Right.
And we were down, Adam Mizzi, myself, and his wife, Catherine, who were their partners in the Royal. We were doing something in Costa Rica, and the world was cratering. Banks had no money, and I had just come out of downtown. I had done the Lady Luck, and I did Hogs and Heifers and Triple George and Celebrity. And didn't matter what you did. Every bug was going to hit a windshield in those days. So downtown, just like most of what we see before us, like Fountain Blue and other things that got hit with the economic tsunami, just hit it. And I think as optimists, we always thought, hey, you know, 6 months, we'll be fine. Well, that wasn't the case.
Right.
2007 became 2008, 2009.
Right. Right.
And it comes a time when, what are you going to do? I was exposed to the property from Adam and his wife to look at it, and it had some merit because of its location. There's something about Convention Center Drive. There's something about the LVCVA as a driving force of the next market to come.
Mm.
LVCVA has always been that place where, you know, whether they were taking a picture of the girl with the bomb on her, it's always that next play. And sometimes just because it was offered to you, you start walking through it. You start thinking about it. So we took it.
All right. So you're walking into it, and you're like, okay, well, this needs work.
That's an understatement.
Yeah. How do you start? Where do you start?
Well, in the old days, you'd go to a bank and you'd get a line of credit.
Right.
Put 10, 15 million together and you go build. Well, there are no banks that would even think about lending money on a redo.
Right.
But there's this thing called adaptive reuse. So sometimes it's a crawl walk theory. You want to crawl first. So we started by saying, look, Adam had a great marketing background. His wife has a great design background. And everybody had a pedigree in the business. Adam had worked for the big needle thing down here.
Stratosphere.
And he's got worked for Dennis Gomes, who just passed away. And and Catherine did as well. So a lot of us were just Vegas people who understand high-end market. And we thought that there was a marketplace, especially with putting our talents together. And me from a development side, where they're more inside the glass and I'm more outside the glass, and just say, look, why don't we start slow? So we brought in Margot Silverman from Yates Silverman, and we brought in people like Billy Richardson, who did the Barrymores, and said, why don't we just take this easy? But because of where we are right now, why don't we start small? Because one thing Vegas has between, you know, let's say Sahara all the way up, over the top is done.
Yeah.
We did Mirage, Treasure Island, Bellagio. Then you have Aria. You have all of these places where if you want to see something about development, Vegas has done it.
Right.
Whether they're economically sound or viable, who cares? We thought that, wouldn't it be interesting to take a look at everything that we tore down, like the Castaways and other places, and said, why don't we just do small well?
Mm.
And then see if that works. So we opened the Royal Bar.
Okay, so was that the first thing that you did was the Royal Bar?
Royal Bar.
Okay. So and I think we've got a photo of that. While I'm showing that.
That's kind of a royal bar.
Yeah. Let's see here. Let me find that.
That's the royal pool.
Where is my...
And you can throw me off of this show anytime if I just keep chatting.
I can.
I can go for hours.
You're my landlord now. I probably can.
Good point.
Yeah.
How's that air conditioning?
By the way, it's
I can
terrible.
Shut it down.
It's terrible. When we first built this place, it circulates the same in here.
That's kind of the Royal Lounge, isn't it?
So that's the lounge.
Yeah.
And which is very nice.
Very sexy.
There's the bar over
that
here.
That would be Catherine and, you know, Adam from the marketing side is the pretty
there we
pictures.
Are.
Yeah.
So here's the lounge. And then the den.
Yeah, the den.
So you started there.
Yeah.
See, I thought you started with Barry Morris.
No. We started with, here's the way you work it, you know, and this is not scientific. Sometimes you just got to get down and dirty, and you got to start doing the work yourself. So because we knew everyone, in either in the construction or design business, in that particular case, we reached out to guys that we knew and said, look, who needs work? Let's get this bar in shape. Let's get a license. Let's get liquor. Let's start bringing this thing back to life.
Right.
And then if anybody walks through that front door and buys a drink, then maybe there's a shot here. We limited the amount of money that we spent so that we weren't too into it too deep.
Right.
And then we opened, I think, December 23rd or 24th of 2010. And I think it was Christmas Day. I went to let everybody go home for Christmas, and I left at 6 in the morning because there was 400 people there.
Wow.
So sometimes, you know, you just get surprised. And again, that goes back to the business. The business always tells you if you're right or wrong. Not because you're smart or you got some bright idea. It's because you do what you intuitively know. And if they show up and they start smiling, okay, you might be 50% there. Mm-hmm. Now, that gave us the right to go out and talk to people that I knew, people that Adam and Catherine knew, and then...
You know, and is that how you brought in the Barrymore?
Well, Barrymore, I think Billy had come in. I'd known Billy. The Richardson family is well known in this town.
Explain, first of all, that's your high-end restaurant there.
Yes.
Make sure people know that.
And they really took the reins of that place and designed it and did it with us in a partnership. But we look at those kind of guys and say, you know, they brought in James Gundy. They understood exactly what they were after. Plus, this is a family that's been here since 1914. So when they ended up doing this restaurant, you just sit back and watch it happen. And you've been there.
Yeah.
So it was a great second chapter to the Royal Bar, because now you had the Barrymore, which was really this next amazing place.
Yeah.
And we've gotten great notoriety
over
the last 6 to 8 years.
Let me ask you about that. So you've gotten some huge press.
Right.
CNN. You know,
yes.
Reached out to you guys and
yes.
said nice things. And you've been in all the local rags, Las
yep.
Vegas Weekly and Seven Magazine,
sure.
I think, has written about you.
Sure.
And we've talked about
That's
you
Adam.
Here. Talk to me about the impact. Do you recognize an impact from that kind of press, or is it just kind of nice to have?
No, I think it's essential to the business. But the basics are you wake up in the morning, and Chef Francisco and Block 16, which is Billy's company, does one thing. They make great food.
Right.
The design and the architecture and the way that they do everything else, they hire great people. And as a result of that, you've had the steak burger, you've eaten over there. Every time you go in there, you get great food, you get great service, you get a good feel.
Mm-hmm.
That's how you play that game.
Yeah.
So as a result of that, to be honest with you, a little surprising how over the top it
right.
was. But it's a pedigree that really, let's face it, kind of surprised us. But after you read it and you see who shows up and the way that it's been marketed, it's not a surprise at all.
So what has happened so far? I mean, you've been doing this now for a couple years there
sure.
at this property. What's happened
Actually,
so far?
Actually, a year and 3 months.
Okay.
Not bad.
Not bad. So disappointments. What's happened so far that you thought, oh, if I had to do that again, I'd do it a little differently? Besides this
interview. This is live TV.
besides this interview. I'm going to get a letter tomorrow.
That was good.
Your rent's going up.
That was good. That was good. Yeah, I can't say that. But I would say generally...
I'm going to have my last beer here.
Let me finish my whiskey.
No one's ever going to say that I sucked up to the boss or whatever.
No. There's no boss here. I don't think I have been disappointed. I think there's probably disappointments in myself and maybe on timing
yeah.
and patience. But I think that's also comes now where, like you, meeting you.
That was a disappointment.
No. That was not a disappointment. I'm finding that the more people that are walking through my door, because of the result of the success of the bar and Barrymore, you know there's certain things I can talk about, certain things I can't
sure.
talk about. But what's happening is, in almost a subchapter of a performa, is result.
Yeah.
And result is those guys that walk through the door. So what's happening is, I think people are coming out of this economic neutron bomb, where a lot of people have lost their 401ks, lost their jobs, lost their money, lost their, in my world, development money. Like, whoop, I used to be worth a lot of money, and now, you know,
right.
whoops, I don't have any money.
Yeah.
And what we're seeing is people are slowly starting to come back together. And they're realizing that, okay, it's not what it was, and it probably won't be like that for quite some time. But in the meantime, what a great place to live,
yeah.
And what a great bar, and what a great restaurant to hang out in.
Right.
So I think when I look at what disappoints me is that I wish I was moving a little bit quicker. Mm-hmm. But then, in retrospect, it's almost better it's a little slower.
Yeah.
Because the market's going to be a little easier to kind of work.
Yeah.
And it's and I think generally, Las Vegas, as we were an overtop casino entertainment company, we're about to launch this new thing about Las Vegas, which chapter is being written by all of us.
Right. And I know that you can't speak to great detail about this, but I know that one of the things that we have to be cautious of, whenever we do anything, whether it's what you do or what I do or what anybody does, you do something and it's pretty cool and people recognize it's cool, they're waiting for the next thing.
Sure.
So, for example, I mean, just within the property itself, I would guess that you're probably going to do room stuff. Change.
Oh, yeah, yeah. But you know what? You play off that. You know, like you mentioned downtown. You know, you got Tony Hsieh going out there doing the Zappo thing, but you got guys like Derek Stevens, who just bought the Fitzgerald and bought the Golden Gate. You're seeing this new blood kind of show up, and everyone kind of like gets geographical, uptown, downtown. That's bullshit. Excuse me.
Oh, God. Get the time on that.
I'm so sorry.
Write that time
down. Las Vegas Boulevard is Las Vegas Boulevard. And even though the essence of downtown is downtown, and you see this life coming back, it's really this city. Nothing's really new. There's just new players bringing new blood to this. And I apologize for that. I promised I wouldn't do that.
You did.
I did. Can we take that back?
No.
Okay, sorry.
I feel a little bit better about my my landlord situation right now.
Okay, take next month off.
What's that cost you? About a year.
But when you think about those spirits that are showing up now are kind of like me 40 years ago. Mm. You know, they're bringing some cash. They're bringing in that cachet of wanting to be part of this thing called Las Vegas.
Yeah.
And, you know, you look at Steve and you look at Adelson and you look at Harris and all these other players that have contributed to this town. And you know what? It nothing's changed.
Yeah.
This town's doing just fine.
So before we wrap up, I want to know, are you seeing anything out there? I don't want you to name names, but are you seeing people doing things that you think is amiss, that they're zigging when they should be zagging? And also, are you seeing things out there that surprises you that it's going as well as it is? That, wow, that move, I may not have guessed that move. I may not have done that move myself.
Right.
But it looks like it's getting traction and it's moving forward. So are there things out there that concerns you? You know, not necessarily people doing bad things, but are there things happening that makes you a little concerned?
Jobs.
And, okay. So, but, I mean, but is it, how do you solve that problem? I mean, you got to hire people to solve that. People are watching their money because they're afraid that they're going to get caught. I mean, even a small business is worried about that, right?
Sure.
But we're looking at hiring somebody, but I'm watching every week.
Sure,
I do my own numbers so I can know exactly what my in and my out is, so that if I do bring somebody on, I'm not going to get caught, because the last thing I want to do is bring somebody on and then let them go.
Yeah.
Right?
So what was that question again?
So what's out there that the jobs thing I get, but are you seeing talk or marketing BS that's out there that you're thinking, maybe not? There might, and the answer may be not really.
The answer really is that it's better, and you're starting to notice that people are getting a better attitude. I'm noticing that there's better volume in conventions. Mm. I notice that there's the Lynx project is breaking ground. We're about to open a new airport, and I think there's some political conversation about, you know, hey, this is going to happen and that's going to happen, but then the Smith Center is going to open.
Right.
I mean, this thing is amazing.
Very nice.
You know, and even though maybe some of this stuff started 7 or 8 years ago, you know, I just wish it was moving a tad faster, mm-hmm. because I think people need it. But in the meantime,
and a rising tide lifts all boats. If things go better, it's going to help everybody, you, me, everybody.
Oh, I think you're exactly right. But I think at this particular point, I wish it was moving a little bit faster. Residential housing needs to be solved.
Yeah.
You know, but that's kind of bigger than me.
Yep.
You know, right now, that's, I think everybody's looking for that turnaround, but that's really kind of a financial problem. I don't know. I really don't know. I think every day you kick the sheets off, you jump out of bed, and you say, let's do it again.
There you go.
And I think that's a Nevada spirit. I think that's an American spirit. And I think within about, I'm a light year compared to where I was last year, And I really, really see that from this point, if we talk again after this month, if we talk again a year from now, I think both of us will be a light year ahead of where we are right now.
Cool.
That's a good place to end this.
Hey, it is. Bob?
What a pleasure.
Right.
Absolutely.
It was outstanding.
Because if I keep drinking this whiskey, I might talk too much.
I know.
Much.
Then all the really dirty secrets comes out.
No, like no.
Anyways, the Royal House, those of us here at the Vegas Video Network have been a big fan of the place. Great restaurant, very cool bar. What's that game where you slide the, what's that called?
Shovelboard.
Yeah.
I'm telling you, the best game at a bar ever. Ever. And
absolutely.
I will tell you that David Ivey and I are unbeatable, just so you know. Thanks very much for playing along, Bob. We're going to take a quick 15-second break, and we'll be back with my legal counsel, Ray Flavin. This is the Living in Las Vegas podcast. We'll be right back. Thank you.
Oh, hello there. My name is Brandon Gooch Hahn, host of Awkward Silence 2.1. And when I'm not living vicariously through Chris Phillips, I'm on VegasVideoNetwork.com.
Hey, everybody, welcome back. You know what's fun about the breaks? Is the kumbaya spirit that you have here. One guest leaves. First of all, he's pleasant. I'm sorry about saying the word. What do I owe ya? He brought out his checkbook, offered me a 10 grand check. I'm like, no, you keep that, Bob. We're buddies. You know, just give me a nice break on the next gin and tonic over at the Den, and we're good to go. Meanwhile, our next guest comes in, they're talking, riveted. This is what's the coolest thing in the world. Another cool thing about this show is we get to hang out with people who actually watch the show. And one of those folks is, camera one, boop, this man right here. Ladies and gentlemen, big hand.
Hey, all right.
Ray Flavin, there he is. Now, as a matter of fact, a longtime chat guy. He usually kind of is in the chat. He gets it happen. He's doing. He's making it. He's a goer. He's a doer. He's a shaker. But he's here. And we had the distinct pleasure of spending the weekend, well, not the whole weekend. I think I said too much. Good night. We're done. No, we actually got to do a couple things that was fun. And I wanted to bring them up. We've covered these things a little bit before, but some neat things popped up during the weekend that I wanted to talk about. And I wanted Ray to help out here because he threatened me. He's 6'7", and he said, if I don't get on your show, I'm going to have you killed. So we did a couple things. The first thing, we went over to a place that we've talked about before on the network called Herbs and Rye, which is this restaurant here. Another one of those outstanding websites that aren't quite built yet. And we've talked about it on Pub Crawl, and I just wanted to bring them up for one particular reason. They have what I think is probably one of the coolest bar menus I have ever seen.
Except for it doesn't have prices.
What were those? You know what?
Melissa, my wife is Melissa. She looks down at the thing and she goes, there's no prices. Is it $20 a pop? Is it $30 a pop?
Do you know how much they were?
Do you know? I didn't look. I mean,
so
first of all, for all of you in chat,
that's funny.
You could be here. If you're in chat, you could be here.
See?
Okay? I'm telling you.
Dreams come true.
You could be here, right here, okay?
Dreams
come true. But we looked down at the drink menu, and it's got no prices. And the first two pages?
There's three pages.
Three pages.
Drinks.
Three. So you get a five-page menu. First three pages are...
Drinks.
Russian mule,
yeah.
Ward 8, this, that.
And they got the story behind them, which I like. They had the background. Like, so here's pre-Prohibition. Here are the drinks that were then. Here's the Prohibition drinks. Here's the post-Prohibition drinks. So it was clever, and it had that old English, not old English, but that old kind of font and look and the old photos that you would see back in the old Sears catalogs,
right,
that
right,
kind of
right,
graphics, right?
Right.
So it's fun to see that kind of work because it's, you know, we go to 1,000 bars here in Vegas, and they all have just the standard, here's the drinks that we have to offer, buy them and get going. These guys put some work into it. And so I wanted to tip my hat to that because it was clever. And the other thing is I don't normally order drinks off the menu.
Oh, right.
I
right
almost
there.
Never do that.
Oh, yeah.
I almost always order a Tanqueray and Tonic, Nectar of the Gods.
Sailor Jerry.
Or a Sailor Jerry and Diet. Or if they don't have Sailor Jerry, a Captain and Diet. That's pretty much what I drink.
Right.
But I'm looking at this menu, and I'm like, wow, this menu is outstanding.
Yep.
I have got to play. I've just got to get at it. So my first drink was a Hemingway daiquiri.
Who is our server?
Oh, he's famous.
I know. Well, that
he's Yelp famous. And Edwin?
He was all over it. He was like, you should have the, and yeah. I said, what should I have? And he said, you should have the Ward 8. So I was like, Ward 8,
yeah.
I'm done.
And they asked, what do you like, gin? Well, then you should have this. I like rum. Yep. You should go with this. And so, you know, these guys clearly have been taught, you know, they probably tasted all the stuff, kind of know how it plays out, understand the story. He understood the story. He was reciting the stories for some of these drinks while it was going on.
Right.
You know, that's part of the vibe. And if you look at the outside of this restaurant, it's nothing to look at.
No.
You know, I pulled up and I'm like, oh, I probably should have picked a different place. I'm like, this may not be great. You walk
inside.
It looks great.
This place, well, looks great. Ambiance, ton of feeling, light, sort of soft.
Yeah.
Reds, browns. I mean, really classy place.
Dark woods, leather.
So then I'm thinking about how am I going to pay for this? But yeah.
So I ordered the like I said, the Hemingway daiquiri. I think Melissa had the Blood and Sand.
She had two of them.
Yep. And Melissa had a Moscow Mule.
Yep.
And so we did the proverbial, I'll taste yours, you taste mine, let's go ahead and share stuff so we can all get jaundice as well. and come to find out, I thought they were all good. And they were big boy drinks. They were adult drinks.
Except for mine.
Oh, yours didn't have that?
No, mine.
I tasted a little.
You tasted a little gin.
What was yours called?
Mine was called the Ward 8. It had gin in it.
Right.
And I'll tell you what, you could have poured me a gallon of that stuff. I would have just drank it like, oh, it's like, you know, I mean, it's like orange juice. It had a very citrus sort of base, a little hint of gin. I could have drank those till I was stupid.
Hey, Jacob, start and stop the stream. Their chat is saying us that they're seeing us, or hearing us out of sync. So anyways, I tried the Hemingway daiquiri.
Yep.
It had this really outstanding aftertaste. And I couldn't even describe what that aftertaste was, but I'm like, God, that's a big boy drink. I really like that. And then Melissa had this Moscow Mule, which is a pretty popular drink, in this big copper cup. You know, it looked like kind of like she loves snow cones. Mm-hmm. So it had like snow cone ice with the beverage in it. It was outstanding. So we're like, well, that's good. And then the sand and what was it? Blood and Sand. I don't know what was in that.
She had the Blood and Sand. When it was served to her, the server came up, and I don't know what he did, okay? He had sort of a citrus peel in his hand, and he took his lighter, and he squirted the peel, hit the lighter, and then it made a burst of flame over the top of the drink.
Yeah.
And I was like, then, well, the first time he did it was sort of pointed at your Melissa, because I have a Melissa, you have a Melissa.
Right.
It was pointed at your Melissa, and she goes, I have hairspray.
Please don't kill us.
There's this burst of flame, and I think she ordered, did she order two? I think
well,
Melissa
I ordered
had,
one.
Okay, so you ordered
I,
one.
My
so
second
you had
drink
the
was
one.
The was the Blood and Sand, because it was very good, and right. I'm a little fascinated by fire. So they did that for me, too.
Fair enough.
And I asked Ed, or whatever his name was, have you ever burned yourself once? So I'll tell
you.
Burned me once. I'll never do it again. But anyways, so it was great. Then we had dinner there as well. I thought dinner was okay. I actually liked my steak. I had a ribeye like I always do. It's my test. I had they had clams, by the way, and they were too expensive. I didn't order them. They were $22 for clams. Appetizer, it's too much money. Didn't want to do that. Had their Caesar salad.
I thought you made a great move during dinner. It's kind of a steak place, so you have four cuts. We had ribeye, top sirloin, Kansas City, and I think you had the ribeye. You
had the
big ribeye. Okay. And then they had joke dishes, what I call joke dishes, where they say, if you can eat 60 ounces of steak,
right.
or if you can eat 120 ounces of steak,
right.
we're calculating whether that's, I mean, it turns out
seven
the top
pounds.
One, it's 7.5 pounds of
right.
steak. If you can eat 7.5 pounds of steak, it's free. Oh, okay.
Yeah, I'll get right on that.
Well, so Scott says, and this is so important, he corners the server and he says, there are different toppings that you can have on your steak. There's a blue cheese, a fried blue cheese. There is a spice rub. You have some options.
Right.
Well, Scott says, do I need the options because of the meat? Do I need that?
And
the server
alone.
Just tells him straight up, no, all the meat is so fantastic,
right.
you don't need it. So he skips it, but Melissa doesn't.
My
and
Melissa.
Then...
Right. So she, and I forget what the rub was. What the rub was. Get it?
Cuban, I believe.
Yeah. And so she, it was very, very spicy. And Melissa likes spicy food. She likes Thai and that kind of stuff. And it was so spicy, it was not pleasant for her. And, you know, later on the next day, she said, man, it was awful spicy. She was, you know, polite during dinner. But the next day, she's like, man, it was not good. Now, my steak was actually pretty good. I didn't have any of the goo. I just had steak, no salt, no pepper. Just give me the meat, man. Let's see what you got. That's the test. So the Caesar was, it was fine. It wasn't as good as Golden Steer. It wasn't as good as, oh, Barrymore, which we haven't, I don't think we talked about. We had, I think it was my birthday dinner at Barrymore. Did we talk? Well, no, we haven't been on since
then. Steak burger?
No. We had, so for my birthday, we ate at Barrymore. And they had probably the best tasting Caesar salad I've had. They don't do a table side, which to me is a big deal. It was outstanding. So that's kind of what I compare now. So it was nowhere near a Barrymore Caesar, but it was okay. Steak, good. You know, drinks, outstanding. Ambiance, great. Service, great. Outside, spooky.
Really spooky. Really yeah. Spooky.
And the reason why we were there is because we wanted to see this band called High Voltage, which is an ACD cover band. And the reason we wanted to see this band is because a workmate of Melissa, her husband, is one of the singers in the band. So we thought, well, we'd be supportive. And it was at Counts Vamped. And I'd been there before. I saw David's band there. And we thought, well, let's go. And Ray and Melissa were up for us. So we headed on down to Counts Vamped. And it's a rock and roll club. It used to be Dr. Feelgood. It used to be owned by
Vince Neil.
And it's we've talked about this before. It's probably one of the most well-appointed rock clubs that you're going to see here. It's beautiful. They got Sonar drums, which are expensive drums, you know, for chandeliers, and it's a really nice place. So we get there, and it's relatively busy. I'm not sure what time we got there. It's probably what about 9-ish,
9:30.
Yeah, okay. And we get there, and so the opening band was a Pantera cover band.
A Pantera cover band.
And so Ray had, and he actually put this on Facebook, the funniest line I've heard all week. And what did you say?
I said, a Pantera cover band? Couldn't they have just got Pantera? I mean, think about it. It's Pantera.
It's
a Pantera cover band. I mean, really, they purposefully sing Pantera.
Yeah, it was brutal.
It was horrible. Well, no. You know what? No, because there was a couple rules that I learned. But I'm going to have to explain them carefully.
Okay.
If you want to talk like Pantera lead singer, want to talk like a Pantera lead singer.
Effin.
Yes, you have to effin. Effin has to be inserted in every sentence. So if I'm going to say goodnight, I say, good effin, goodnight.
If I say
I love you guys, it's not I love you guys. I effin love you guys.
Right. The whole night was that.
All night was that.
And it's that growl. The one thing the guy did that was outstanding is he had the greatest hair flip you would see on stage, the whole rotating hair thing that does this. I love that.
While they were playing, I have a program on my phone, and I'm kind of a smart aleck, so I have a program on my phone.
This is so funny.
And what the program does is that if you hear a song, like you hear a song on the radio.
What's that called, that program?
Soundex, I believe. But okay. you click it. And then it listens for a while, and then it says, this is what your song is.
Right.
You
know, yeah. And
so
while Pat,
and well, the thing is that it even does more. It will give you the lyrics so you can sing along.
Right.
So I'm thinking I could think, you up and whatever, you know, I could sing with Pantera, whatever. So anyway, I click Soundex, and I let it. And there's a little circle timer, and it's timing out.
Right.
Well, it times out, and it goes, I have no idea. I have no idea what those guys can't help.
It's so funny because I've seen the same kind of app. Wayne has it on his iPhone, and it's usually very impressive. I mean, really impressive. Where we've hummed stuff and it picked it up.
A person can sing.
Yeah,
a person can literally sing.
It's nuts.
Yeah, that they can sing and it will pick off the song.
It's
okay?
Nuts.
So that's why I initiated it during this Pantera excursion.
Right. And we were sitting next to each other, and I'm like, this is going to be pretty fascinating at this point. And it, you know, it did the whole, I mean, I've seen it where it just starts to think and it gets it. It doesn't even get all the way around its thinking process. It goes, oh yeah, that's Al Jarreau, whatever. And it sort of goes around and around and around, and it basically says, is that the Pantera cover band over at Count Vamped? Here's how they sound.
Ding, 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 ding.
Yeah. So we got through that, and we thought it was kind of funny. And the reason why...
Well, you have skipped an entire part.
That happens with me a great deal.
Well, usually I'm on the chat, and Jackie's helping me out, but you've skipped a whole thing. We walk into the bar, and we've reserved a table. Melissa's reserved a table.
That's right.
We reserved a table.
I got bitched about this whole thing.
Yeah.
God, that's so good.
So we've reserved a table.
You're in.
Melissa's reserved a table, okay?
We have a photo.
Look at that. Yeah, there we go. The table's reserved for Melissa Whitney.
Chicka bow wow.
You know where this table's at?
Oh.
This is the king's table.
VIP, baby.
This is the table where people are looking at us like, who are they?
Who are those
we
people?
Know they're somebody. Who are these people?
Right?
I mean, that's where we're at. We're sitting at the table where if it was a rap video, there would be Cristal and we'd be like, yeah, we're busting
we'd
it.
We'd be making doing, it rain,
yeah,
I guess.
Yeah, whatever we would be doing as white folk, that's what we would be doing. But anyway, so we're in that table. I mean, the table,
awesome.
It's 6 feet across. Okay. We have room for 12 of our closest friends.
That's awesome.
Okay. It's like the best table ever. So we're all sitting around this table.
And so we should talk about that, because the last time we talked about this place, I complained about that fact that you had to reserve a table. What I was told was that to get a table, and they've got those little pub tables, they're actually the large pub tables all through the floor just before the dance area and then the band. And they have like two or three booths on the side, and then they have this king booth in the back raised up. And we were told you can reserve a table, but like any other place, you got to pay for it. I'm like, man, that sucks. I mean, I talked about it on a show. That sucks. They should make smaller tables, let people get in. Otherwise, people aren't going to show up. Come to find out, it doesn't suck so bad. Here's why. It's free. Doesn't cost anything. And you can do it online. You can log on to their website and go, reserve a table. This is what Melissa did. She just reserved a table. They said, you can call and follow up if you want. She did. Called a couple times. I think it might have helped that she called. She followed up.
Okay.
Because she called once and said, hey, I'm just following up. Well, the GM's not here yet, but you know, give a call back. She called. I think she may have called two or three times to verbally follow up. So I wouldn't be surprised if that didn't help put us in that booth. But when we walked in, I'm looking for our little booth, our little table, you know, in the middle of the floor, and I look up and I see reserved for Melissa Whitney in the king's booth. I'm like, well, look at us. Look at us.
So we're sitting in the king's booth, and there we're sitting, and the service is outstanding. Mm. There is a young woman there.
We have a photo of all the ladies there.
Well, there's a young woman there. She's attractive, but who cares if she's attractive, okay? She is the third from the...
Yeah, the guy with the tattoo on her neck.
The tallest girl there is my beautiful Melissa.
Right.
The next girl who looks like a vampire, that's our waitress. There's famous Melissa. No, I don't remember. I don't remember her name, but I'll tell you what.
She's great.
She ran... She made sure, she asked you about your drinks every time. Every time she passed a table, and I mean, it might have been because we were in the king's table.
That could be.
But the service was, I've never had that service.
It was unbelievable.
I've never had the service.
We never wanted for a drink the whole time.
You never, not for a moment, okay? She was always very attentive about your drink.
That was good.
And
she was nice.
And she was nice.
Yeah, so that was cool. So we went and saw this band, this AC/DC band called High Voltage. Guess what? Guess how many AC/DC cover bands are called High Voltage? I tried to give them a little juice. I'm like looking them up on the Google. I'm like, okay, we're going to give them a little juice on the big show. Well, I don't know. It's about 100. I don't know, 1,000. One of which is a Van Halen band you just got done telling me.
I went on Facebook because I was like, I took some pictures of the band. I walked down to the stage and took some close-up pictures, and I think we got those.
Yeah. We've got, let me see, we'll start with, this is, we got to talk about, yeah.
Okay.
So, this is on
so the, I took some close-up pictures.
And,
and the idea was, what I want to do is, I've done this, I mean, I've taken these pictures, I think they look pretty great. There we go, look at this. I mean, this is all on an iPhone. Look at that picture. Hello, in the chat, hello, look at that picture. I'm taking these pictures. I want to make sure that these pictures get onto the fan page of this band called High Voltage.
Right.
So I go on Facebook and I type in High Voltage.
1,000.
1,000.
Nuts.
And the funniest part is that You would think if a cover band's name was going to be High Voltage, it would be an AC/DC cover band. Mm-hmm. That goes without saying. Oh, no. One of the bands, actually more than one, scarily enough.
I don't get it.
Van Halen.
I don't get that.
Van Halen. Van Halen. My name of my cover band is High Voltage, and Van Halen is who I cover.
I don't get it.
I went with Scott. I don't get it. But anyway, I tried to get these pictures. They're on my Facebook page. I tried to get these to the band. But, so anyway.
Let me tell you the vibe about these guys.
Okay.
It's very clever. So, as everybody knows, AC/DC had two singers. They had Bon Scott, the original singer, then they had Brian Johnson. So, what they do here is, remember that picture of the four gals? Just go ahead and bring that up for a second. The gal on the side, on the far, left as I look at it, the girl with the glasses, she's the wife of the Bon Scott singer, which is the person you see on the Facebook page right now. So, That's how we got there. We were there because, we knew somebody who knew that singer.
Do you think that had anything to do with us getting the extra great seats?
I don't think they knew that she was in our booth.
Oh, okay.
I think they had no idea about that. But it's good. Maybe, I don't know, maybe Melissa said, by the way, I know somebody who knows somebody. She's that way. She's clever, that one.
Okay.
But what they do, which is really cool, so they start the show with the Bon Scott singer. And they do, I don't know, 5 or 10 or 8 songs, or whatever the number is, and all the hits, you know, boom, ba, you, bob. It's great. And then they take a break, and then they play this a bunch of radio blurbs about Bon Scott dying. And Melissa, your Melissa, kind of freaked out a little bit about that.
She started to cry a little bit. She teared up a little bit because the lead singer for AC/DC had died. I told her that, no, he was in the back. He'll be out at the end. But that didn't seem to comfort her.
So they play this stuff, and then the band comes back out again, and now they've got Brian Johnson as the singer, the one who's the singer currently. So it's got this cool kind of vibe going, and they're very good. I thought they were very good, and they kind of look a little like him. I mean, again, here's a picture of the guy who does Bon Scott. Looks kind of like him. And the guy who, you can see the guy who's doing Angus Young, looks a little bit like
By the way, who took those pictures?
I think you did, right?
Okay,
outstanding.
Just for the chat. I'm an old chat monkey, so I just wanted to make sure. Those are my pictures. Those right there, yeah.
And then...
Wait. No, go back one. Go back one picture.
This is an important picture.
So me and Scott are sitting there, and it's as I said, the table was enormous. It's 6 feet across. There's enough room for, we have 5 people sitting in this booth. There could have been 12. There could have been 15. But we're sitting in this booth, and then Scott looks over, and he's kind of giving me one of those right over there. And I look over there, and this is what I see.
Slayer. Nice.
Slayer.
Rock that name.
Nice. Now, rock that t-shirt,
now,
man.
Meanwhile.
Rock that t-shirt.
While we're sitting around, is this the shot? Hold on, let me just check.
Well, we're sitting around. Okay, this is something that happened to me. This is what happened to me. I'm sitting there, and I know that the count is the guy who repairs cars when they get purchased by the people on Pawn Stars. Also on American Restoration, Rick's Restorations. This is the guy who comes in, he evaluates a car, and he tells them how much he's going to charge in order to restore a vehicle.
Right. And now, so he walks, this guy, the count, whose name this bar is named after.
Correct.
Come to find out, didn't know that. You learn a lot of stuff here in the Las Vegas.
This guy walks by.
So he walks by. Just walks by. And Ray, freaks out. He's like,
I know.
It's
no,
a count.
No.
It's a count.
Oh, okay. So I'm sitting there, and I know this is the count's bar. I know it's the count's bar. And all of a sudden, this guy walks by, and it's the count. And I go, hey, Melissa. That was the cat. And then he takes off. And I was like, oh my gosh, how frustrating. Maybe, I got unlucky. The next time he walks by, I grab my phone. He looks at me. And then he kind of walks away. And I go, well, maybe the guy doesn't like to have pictures taken. That was my first thought.
Okay.
Maybe the guy doesn't like to have his picture taken.
So I saw all this going on. I'm like, well, I don't know what the count is.
Well, Scott's saying, who is that?
Ray genuflecting like,
No. Scott's going, who is that? And I go, that's the count.
That's the count.
And then
he's on Pawn Stars.
Scott looks at me like this.
All right.
It's the count. Yeah. Okay, it's the count. Like one, two, three, four.
So I get it.
I am the count. One, two, three. No. It's a different count.
So I'm like, okay, so I get out of the booth. I look for the guy. He's just down, you know, a couple steps away. He's just hanging out with a bear. And I'm like, hey, hi. There's a guy over here who's a big fan of yours. We'd like to have your picture taken with him. Would you be okay with that? He's like, absolutely. He was really one of the nicest guys there. So he comes hanging over. He comes back. And we take this picture, which is Melissa and the Count. And yours truly, you'll notice that, by the way, my tongue is much longer than these punks. Look at that. Look at that bad boy. That's from doing Gene Simmons all through high school. somebody liked it, and I'm not going to tell you who. Anyway, super nice guy. Ray had his picture taken with him. He was running around taking pictures, friendly, smiling. And what was really cool is at the end of the show, end of the night, basically, we're all going out, and he's out. He kind of follows us. He kind of liked our booth, our people, because we're real nice. We're just hanging out, having a good time, and being complimentary to everybody who's around us. And we go out, and we're getting ready to separate. And he's out with us, and he met your son, and he took a picture. Actually, we have a picture with your son.
Well, you didn't get part of the story. I'll tell the story.
There you go.
Here's the story. He's kind of hanging out with us. And I mean, you know, really, it's like this guy that you see on TV, like Scott Whitney. No, he's this guy you see on TV, and you're like, holy moly, this is this guy. Now, I arranged to have my son come and pick me up at the bar. Smart. Well, I texted my son. I said, get out of the car right now, because I wanted to have him out of the car when the Count walked out. And then the Count walks out, and you can see this picture on Facebook. The Count walks out, and my son is stunned. He's stunned for days. He's still stunned right now.
Stunned for days. Awesome.
He's like, oh, my gosh, that guy I saw on TV, he's right there. And
there
then I snap the picture.
That's cool. So the AC/DC band, pretty cool. I have a whole new respect for Count's Vamped, the bar, because you should absolutely call in or email on their website or do whatever you have to do to get a table. Because that, even if it was just a table, doesn't matter. You wanna get at it, and that's it. Hey Ray, thanks for playing along today, my brother.
I hope I won some exciting prizes.
You did. Here you have. I was gonna give this away. I'm gonna give away two. We're gonna wrap up over here, and a couple things. First, again, check out all the ways to reach out to us. Email honorq@livinginlv.com. And like I said before, let me see if I can bring this back up again. Stand by, kids. La, 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 la. Here's what I'll do. Go back to this page here real quick. If you log on and send us a voicemail, the first voicemail I get that I use,
I'm going to model it.
Right. So in other words, if you send me, you suck, Scott, well, I'll probably use that one. But the first one that I use, I will give you.
I'm going to model it.
Oh, here we are. Look at this.
You're not going to get this anywhere. Vegas. This is anywhere else here.
And it's adjustable.
One size fits most.
Okay. Vegas Video Network visor. What? You get one of those for free. If we put you on the air, you'll get a Vegas Video Network visor. What? You can't beat that. So get up on that website. Rock it like you mean it. Right over here again where it says send us a voicemail. Right over here, that's where you want to go, and we will appreciate you playing along. Again, thanks to Bob for playing along, thanks for Ray for playing along, thanks for Jacob for being a stud back there. He's still assless, but best assless man I've ever seen. And don't forget, if you want to be adopted, friends at livinginlv.com. That's it. We'll see you guys next week. Take care, everybody. Bye-bye.
Good night, everyone. Ticket.